It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And joining us is Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning, Ben. Good morning.
All right. We've been talking about statutes of limitations, and we think we're working our way through the alphabet here now.
Well, we have. We're at some fun ones now, though. We're at the infamous word tort.
Yes.
Tort is a civil wrong to another individual or their business. It's where you have been civilly wronged. And we're going to talk about some of the statutes of time periods that you have to file your suit if for some reason you feel that you have been wronged. And right off the top, we'll just take the one slander. Slander is 1 year after the date of the statement. The statement, of course, is uttered, and then 1 year thereafter you must file for the tort of slander. That's an interesting one, isn't it, Ben? Because, of course, there we see what Wes and I would agree to be a very short limitation. I mean, there really aren't that many that are just 1 year.
Yeah, that's pretty.
And yet we talked about, to repeat ourselves from programs of a couple weeks ago, you know, we talked about these statutes of limitations and we talked about kind of the philosophy behind them. And of course we want witnesses to be, that we want their memories to be fresh. We want the documents to be pristine. We want the evidence to be clear and not old and not dated and those kinds of things. And, of course, here we see that with regard to an utterance of a statement that is untrue, that we are particularly going to hold the injured party to a pretty quick statute of limitations, because again, memories are going to fade. There's not going to be any writing necessarily relative to the tort of slander.
So it's a year from when the utterance or when the statement's made?
Correct.
But okay. it doesn't accrue until the person who's damaged knows about it.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Because, I mean, how could you bring an action within a year, which is what you have to do to preserve your rights under the statute of limitations, if you didn't know about, you know, the statement?
Right.
So it technically runs from the date of the statement, but the injured party, their accrual is when you knew or should have known of the statement.
What do you mean by accrual then?
I mean, that's when it starts.
Okay.
That's when the 1 year would start.
Okay.
Yep. So 1 year is really short. You know, frankly, 17 years ago when I finished law school, we had a lot more that were won.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. We had, all our assaults, all of our physical, you know, harm to someone, battery, all these. It was just 1 year.
Trespass
to chattels, trespass to land, all 1 year. Now, and really, I would say probably 15 years ago in that range, that was, those were changed by the North Carolina General Assembly out to a 3-year statute.
And we're talking about North Carolina statutes here. So, again, it can vary in other states. But,
this
is 1 year for slander. Now, does any damage have to have occurred to someone, you know, they can prove there was any damage, or they just have to prove that it was a,
as far as defamation goes?
Yes. Right.
No, you can certainly have nominal damages. We talked about that last week in the context of trespass when we were on real property type claims.
Right.
You don't have to prove actual damages. You may just prove the act and be entitled to, like I said last week, nominal damages, which would be something like $1. Okay. Then the question would be, why would you do that?
Well,
I mean, to
maybe
basically get the person to stop making the defamatory comments.
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, be that as it may, you know, when we get into the issue of damages, yeah, that does become somewhat of a sticky wicket when we're talking about defamation, because you have to show, in order to receive damages through the case, you would have to show something like, you know, I lost this business as a result of you making these false statements about my business. You know, I lost, a relationship was affected because you said something wrong about me, like I had an awful disease or something like that. So it could be subjective, but, usually like in a business context, you're going to have to show, you know, how you were in fact affected by it.
Okay. All right. Yeah. That's one of the example of a tort ruling right there.
Criminal conversation.
Mm-hmm.
That is basically communications, could be actions that lead to basically, let's just put it in layman terms, the split up of a married couple.
Hmm.
It's a separate.
So this is a civil action.
It's a separate civil action that oftentimes spins out of maybe a nasty divorce.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the third party involved that maybe was the wedge between the husband and the wife because there was a relationship somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that third party would, you know, if they partake in that kind of activity, then they potentially could be sued mm-hmm. for a criminal conversation 3 years from the date of the act, which would be, accrual would take place at the time that it was known or should have been known by the party that was damaged as a result, the
okay.
plaintiff, whoever's bringing the claim.
Okay.
So standard 3 years there. Tortious interference with a contract. That would be like if there was a contract between parties and the third party interferes with that contract in some way to mm-hmm. affect the rights of those parties to the contract, that would be 3 years.
What does that interference usually look like? Was it?
Well, you know, you could have a situation where, you know, maybe there are terms in a particular contract between two parties, and, you know, one party is required to provide, a service, provide mm-hmm. something in the contract, and the third party, for some reason, to their own benefit,
mm-hmm.
is trying to interfere with the obligations of the parties.
Trying to get them to break it off.
Trying to get them to break it off for right. their own benefit.
Right.
Maybe they want the business.
Right.
Maybe they want the, you know, the property, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it might be. So they take some type of actions in order to affect the rights of the property to a point where it's, you know, tortious in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's a very broad claim, though.
Right.
You have to really look at the facts. It's very fact specific, but it would be a 3-year statute of limitations. Again, moving through torts, abuse of process,
mm-hmm.
Basically that would be civilly in the event you're abusing the process of suing someone.
Mm-hmm.
You are seeking a claim against someone that has absolutely no merit whatsoever, and you're doing that for the purposes of maybe making them having to hire a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
having to defend themselves. Now, it has to be pretty egregious, you know, to go so far as to be an abusive process type claim. But that would be a 3-year statute of limitations from when you knew or should have known of the abusive process.
Right. Okay.
Moving on, malicious prosecution. That would be a 3-year statute of limitations as well. That would be from a criminal perspective. Let's say that
we hear about that sometimes happening when somebody maybe has been found not guilty of something, but they believe that the prosecution was without merit.
That's exactly what it is right there. You don't have the evidence to bring the claim, but you do
mm-hmm.
it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you do it out of spite.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you do it. Maybe the district attorney's office is being too aggressive in proceeding the prosecution of someone without the evidence to support the claim. So, you know, the civil action then against the party, against the district attorney's office, maybe the state would be malicious prosecution.
Mm-hmm.
3 years.
Yeah, and those cases can drag on. I think of the Duke LaCrosse case. I think there was a lawsuit brought from that.
Yeah.
So there's again, these are all the things that have statute of limitations, as we said. We're going to kind of go through the alphabet of them, but there are many of them, and you always need to make sure you're consult your lawyer about making sure that you've got the right, you've submitted the right evidence at the right time,
Can't miss the statute of limitations. Otherwise, most attorneys can't help you.
That's right. We'll have more to come in a moment.
Maybe all attorneys.
We'll have more to come in a moment. Again, if you would like to ask questions about your legal life, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674. Hey, welcome back here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station every Tuesday morning. It's Harvell and Collins bringing you Let's Talk Legal, and you are invited to call in with your questions.
Give me a call at 800-818-2255 or use one of our local numbers, 247-7282 or 353-4674.
Cecil, Wes hit on the important subject, right, or the point at the very end of that last segment, saying that if you don't hit these statute of limitations, not much you can do from the lawyer standpoint.
Well, that's right. And the way that if you will, the way that that plays out is that, of course, the cause of action is filed, the complaint, if you will, the lawsuit. The lawyer or person representing the defendant then pleads as an affirmative defense the statute of limitations. And that is a issue that is determined by that's a factual issue of law that is then most times determined by the trial court judge who at a motions hearing would hear evidence about the time frame, et cetera, and would then make a decision. And, of course, this is long before it gets to a jury. This is long before it gets to a trial. You know, it's a bar. It's a dismissal.
And Wes, as you mentioned before, these are sometimes, while we think of these as black and white lines, they sometimes are known or should have known.
Absolutely.
Make some little wiggle room in there.
Yeah, that's usually the language that you see, you have known or should have known. You know, interestingly, I've got one that I'm dealing with right now. New client, hired us yesterday, an estate. The situation in this particular case is this is the son from, I think he lives in Maine, calls and says, my mom is so-and-so. She was received X amount of dollars from this estate in Carteret County from this lady who passed away, you know, 10 years ago.
Right.
And she never received the money. And my mom is, you know, she's in her 70s, but she's very clear. And she knows she never received it. And I've looked at her bank records with her. What can we do? So immediate question for me. 10 years. Statute of limitations. What kind of issues are we going to deal with here? You know.
Right.
So
you got to get over that hurdle before
you
gotta
anything get over else. Got to get over that hurdle. Now, we don't know exactly what happened because we pulled the estate file here. Right. We've looked in it. Certainly it says in the estate file that the money should have been paid to her.
Right.
And it was paid to her. But that doesn't mean it, in fact, was paid to her. It just indicates that in the estate file. So that will be something that we jump into over the next couple of weeks, you know, as we evaluate the facts. We'll have to apply the statutes of limitations that may that that may be a bar to recovery for her. But in many cases, in those type situations, you can get around the statute of limitations because she probably didn't know that she was entitled to that inheritance until sometime later.
Right.
You know, and it could have been, you know, know or should have known type thing. And one statute of limitations that we keep in mind with regard to estates is you can always impeach an inventory or accounting in an estate. But there's no statute of limitations on that. So it could be that what was reported was false.
Right.
So we're impeaching that. You know, and we're seeking our recovery, you know, based on that.
Anyway, brand new, so just kind of getting into that.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, I have a question, though, Wes.
Yep.
You know, I mentioned before about these, the defense of pled statute of limitations, the pleading of that, and then the hearing before the court judge, who then decides, as a matter of law, whether to dismiss the case. Now, I know that that is generally the rule, but there are cases, there are factual scenarios where the judge has to refer a certain issue to a jury potentially, correct? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Uh-huh.
You know, the way that works and the way it reads in our cases in North Carolina is that if there's really no factual dispute as far as when the event took place, I mean, so let's say you've got a situation where you're seeking recovery on, you know, a promissory note that's not under seal. So it's 3 years.
Okay.
Okay. And we see that maybe there's $10,000 still owed on the note. But the facts based on the financial records are very clear that the last payment that was made on that was 4 years ago. And there are no other facts. That's it. Well, the holder of the note can only look back 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
So the judge can look at those facts and say, well, holder of the note, if you can't provide evidence to me that there was a payment within the last 3 years that would revive the note,
mm-hmm.
and revive your ability to collect on the note, then this is an issue of law for me. I'm
right.
going to grant statute of limitations. However, you know, in the alternative to that, let's say we're in a situation where it's not absolutely certain factually as to when the plaintiff knew or should have known of the slander,
mm-hmm.
the defamation, the trespass. You know, we didn't know about it,
mm-hmm.
you know, that kind of thing. And the judge really can't make that determination based on, you know, with any in an exact nature. So that would be something that would be sent to the jury, and the jury would have to make a factual determination as
right.
to when the issue was known about or should have been known about by the plaintiff.
Right.
And that would be one of the issues on the verdict sheet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, issue number one, when did the client or when did the plaintiff know or should have known about X? And if they make that determination, or it could be something like, did they know or should have known about X by a certain date? And
mm-hmm.
they answer that yes or no. And then if they answer it, you know, in a certain way, then statute of limitations applies and the whole case is gone then. Yeah.
Let me ask you back on the promissory note one. You say the payment was made 4 years ago. There's a 3 year statute and the judge looks back 3 years. Well, the guy says, well, we had communication during
right.
that time where he promised he was going to pay. Does that have any effect?
Probably not.
Uh-huh.
Probably not. You have to have some pretty extensive representation
mm-hmm.
Indicating that there will be a promise. I mean, if you just had conversation about it, that's almost certainly not going to get you there on
right.
a statute of limitations issue.
Okay.
Yeah. So Cecil's right. In certain situations, if it's, let's just call it black and white.
Right.
Then the judge can then grant the dismissal or grant the summary judgment
mm-hmm.
and dismiss the case based on statute of limitations. If it's more of a we're not exactly sure situation, it's more of a gray area as
mm-hmm.
opposed to black and white, then it could be sent to the jury and the jury can make a factual determination as to when the accrual of the statute started.
Either party can request a jury?
Oh yeah,
To hear the facts of that case.
Yeah, you okay. have to do it at the beginning of the case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you file a complaint and you want a jury, you're going to ask for it
mm-hmm.
in your complaint when you file it. If you want a jury and you're the defendant,
mm-hmm.
then you're going to ask for that in your response to the complaint. If,
okay.
If you don't do that and preserve that right early on, you may waive that right and
right.
not have the right later on.
All right, more to come in a moment on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Hey, welcome back to the program here on a Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law, online at harvellandcollins.com, and talking about torts and again the
right.
Statute of limitations.
We were talking about, you know, the various statute of limitations for,
mm-hmm.
for torts. Most of them are 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Most well-known tort would be a negligence claim.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get into the defamation type torts and, you know, that's a 1 year statute. But intentional infliction of emotional distress, that's one of them,
mm-hmm.
okay? You might wonder, what in the world is that? Intentional infliction of emotional
Seems
distress.
Seems like we hear that a lot in divorce cases.
Yeah, you yeah. do. You know, intentional infliction of emotional distress is you have to have some pretty egregious facts. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you would have to be exposing someone intentionally to an event that is so disturbing
mm-hmm.
so as to actually cause emotional distress.
Well, the internet has brought up a whole new world of those claims.
Right, right. I mean, you could have
public shaming.
A lot of times, let's say if you have a kidnapping claim,
mm-hmm.
you're going to have intentional infliction because
mm-hmm.
this was distressful to me, you know, for you to kidnap me. You know, I had a case one time where someone, this is just terrible, but this person made the other person watch him kill someone.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
Mm.
And then my client ended up having to go into basically a mental hospital for a period of time to get treatment. as a result of the PTSD and depression mm-hmm. and all the things that you would expect after having witnessed something like that. So that would be an intentional infliction of emotional distress type claim. 3-year statute on that. Again, we talked about slander. Then that is spoken defamation. Mm-hmm. Libel is written defamation.
Oh, okay. Okay. A lot of people don't know that difference.
Right. So that's 1 year, as Cecil mentioned. Assault, most people know pretty much what that is. That's 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But assault as a civil case.
That's right.
Not as a criminal one.
These are torts.
That's right. That's right. You assaulted me. I was hurt. Mm-hmm. I incurred medical expenses. I incurred other damages. I missed work.
That's right.
So on and so forth. And I'm entitled to recovery from you as a result. An assault would be a situation where you're putting someone in imminent apprehension or apprehension of imminent harm.
Right.
But there's not contact.
Right. I mean, battery, it can be verbal.
That's right. Battery is the contact part of it in the event we're in a civil context.
Mm-hmm.
So battery, again, sometimes goes hand to hand with assault in this 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got false imprisonment 3 years, trespass 3 years, and that is torts.
Go online to harvellandcollins.com to make your arrangements to talk with the folks at Harvell and Collins.